Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening, we'll talk about insecurity in Africa. And tonight, we have William Asamvo. He is a senior researcher at the Institute for Security Studies in Dakar. He joins us by phone from Dakar. Good evening, Mr. Asamvo. Hello, Mr. Asamvo, are you there?
I'm there.
Hey, how are you today? Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm hearing you very well.
Good, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yes. We also have regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula, who is joining us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas and the panelists.
Thank you very much. And my colleague, we're also joined by my colleague, Aliyu Mustafa of VOA's Hausa Service. Aliyu joins us from Nigeria in Abuja. Good evening, Aliyu.
Hey, Douglas, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Gentlemen, as I said, our topic tonight is insecurity in Africa. Just yesterday, Ghana's government put the nation on high alert in the wake of Sunday's deadly terror attack in neighboring Ivory Coast. This terror alert is the first for the West African country. And since November, Al-Qaeda militants have attacked hotels in two other regional capitals, Bamako and Ouagadougou, and a beach resort outside Abidjan. Let me start in Dakar with Mr. Asamvo. Given all this, give us a general assessment of the security situation in that region.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Not very well. Please go ahead, please.
Yes, I was asking for you for a general assessment of the security situation in that region.
Yes, I mean, I think following the recent attack in Côte d'Ivoire, it has become clear that the most West African countries are virtually or at least potentially at risk of the terrorist threat. And I think the terrorist threat, the violent extremism, is one of the key security challenges in the region currently. And together with that, there are also the usual challenges, for instance, related to the proliferation of small arms and light weapons. And recently there was also a report of the UN on drugs, also stating and underlying the fact that the drug issue was also and still a security challenge in the region. So basically, the region is facing a wide range of security challenges, and among them, the terrorist threat is the most prevailing right now.
I see. Let's go to Abuja, to my colleague, Aliyu. Aliyu, Nigeria was at the center of this insecurity recently, and now it seems to be spreading across the region. How is the situation like in Nigeria now?
Well, Douglas, I have to tell you that the situation in Nigeria is a little bit better than it was a few months ago. The Boko Haram is still alive and around. And as a matter of fact, earlier this week, there was an attack on the mosque in the usual place, which is the northeastern part of Nigeria, and a number of people were killed. But relatively speaking, I can tell you that the Boko Haram insurgency in Nigeria has been diminished to a very unusually low level that we haven't seen in a while. Maiduguri, which is the epicenter of this attack, is a much calmer city now. People are able to stay up late until about 10 p.m. and then walk home. There are even traffic holds up in the state, and at least 22 of the 24 local government areas that were hitherto held by the Boko Haram have been liberated. So there is a sense that some level of success is being achieved. But Boko Haram has appears to be moving outwards towards Niger and launching attacks in Cameroon and other neighboring countries. Mm-hmm. So it is not definite that Boko Haram has been totally eliminated or defeated yet.
I see. Let's go to Durban in South Africa. Suleiman, this is not confined to the West African region. It appears there is insecurity. We have Somalia, in the Horn. We have bubbles of instability going around the continent.
Precisely, Douglas. And the Eastern Central African region, I think, is the most affected and is the most complex, because for 30 years, the region has had, almost 30 years, the region has had very serious security challenges, which has led to quite a number of deaths, of loss of human and natural human and other resources in the area. And in the Eastern Central African region, the way it is complex, it has got both localized or national threats, and then it has also got a dose of the transnational or international threats. You'll find that a bigger chunk of it is localized local threats, which are caused basically by warlordism in the area. For 30 years, you'll find that there have been a lot of warlords within the region who have kept the region under ransom. And this warlordism is not only the small men, but you find that even some countries and some leaders within the regions have turned into warlords themselves. So the region has got serious threats for over 30 years, and it seems it will not it is yet to settle down, because as if it is still continuing. Because first it was Uganda, then you get to Central African Republic, then you get to DRC. DRC has been there 30 years. It has never settled. It has been on and off. Now, recently, we have got Southern Sudan. Recently, we have got Central African Republic. So the whole region, Rwanda and Burundi, so they come on, some come and go. Like in Kenya, there was a time when they had a very big threat. Then we have got the dose of international one, which is Al-Shabaab. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it is a very complex situation as far as the Eastern Central Africa is concerned.
I see. Mr. Asamvo, is it your opinion that these transnational security threats are worse than localized national ones?
I mean, I think both are worrisome issues. Before being transnational, they are first of all national, and they are localized in a country before expanding and spilling over to the neighboring countries. That what we observe with the Boko Haram insurgency, before being now a regional security threat, it was first and mainly focused on within Nigeria borders, even though there were some aspects of it that were also regional. So you don't need to think of a threat and oppose them as transnational and localized. They can be. They can have the both aspects.
Mm-hmm. I see. Ali, the fact that the Boko Haram has spread to other countries, despite the fact that maybe it's being contained in Nigeria, does that pose a risk that maybe that gives them room to come back whenever they want to come back to Nigeria?
You know, Douglas, President Buhari is being accused of being slow in Nigeria, but one credit you have to give to him is his ability to almost bring to an end the adverse effect of Boko Haram. One thing I noticed is that the regional alliance that was formed a few months ago between Nigeria, Niger, Cameroon, Chad, and other regional neighbors doesn't seem to be very much around. Nigeria seems to be fighting this insurgency on its own, within its own country. And as long as Boko Haram is not totally eliminated, as long as they are able to get out of Nigeria and find solace somewhere else, they cannot be said to have disappeared. And so there's always the possibility that they might come back. We don't know how, but Buhari has assured the citizens that is number one priority, is to get rid of these people. And that is what he's doing. He has mobilized and moved operational activities of the Nigerian Armed Forces to the location of the Boko Haram, and they've been bombarding them. So as far as within Nigeria is concerned, I think that effort is paying dividends. But what is in question is whether they have been limited. Their ability to move around to other countries has been limited, but it doesn't seem to be to be safe.
I see. Suleiman, some analysts are wondering why is it now easier for these security threats to move across countries with ease, because you can see in West Africa, they can move across the region as they feel. They can bubble up here, blow up something there. The same is true in East Africa. The Al-Shabaab just moved to Kenya, blew up people. They went to Uganda, blew up people watching a soccer match. Why does it seem so easy now for them to move freely across the continent?
A number of factors. Number one, there hasn't been a combined effort to study and go to the root causes of every security threat. The main policy has been a policy of containment. Most of the time, it has been the war on terror tactics. Mm-hmm. That is to get them, liquidate them, disable them, and finish them without going into the actual causes of these conflicts, of these threats. So as a result, they have got good time to evolve, because they can leave one front and then they move into another front. They hoodwink the security, the government institutions, or whomever is fighting them, whereas they are evolving into another situation. So that one has also been one of the causes. Number two, there have been failure of the systems on the ground, both security and, or let's take them, government systems. Mm-hmm. Some of these causes, some of these conflicts are brought by internal wrangles. No attempts have been made to solve those internal wrangles. Instead, they are used to perpetuate other systems, which again bring in more fires, which create conditions for more of those security threats to rise up. So the failure of the governance systems within many of the countries where these security threats come is also another problem, that since there is no change and the causative factors are within the governance system themselves, and there is no change within the governance system themselves, then there is no attempt. It is as if there is no attempt to solve them. As a result, they can mingle and move and evolve the way they like. So there hasn't been a regional attempt to solve the problem. As a result, they have got room to move, and so other many factors, as my colleagues will look at it.
I see. Mr. Samvo, following up on Suleiman's point there, to what extent is the governance issues a cause or a consequence of these threats?
Yes, actually, the weak governance in some region in across West Africa is a key factor that contributed to the emergence of a wide range of issues, violent extremism, the different traffic of arms, of drugs, and all those issues. So I think it's the state inability to control its border that contributed to that. It's also the state weaknesses. I mean, the weakness of state institutions in those remote areas, and their inability to meet the security needs, to meet some basic needs, education, health, that significantly made those areas vulnerable to the emergence of all forms of criminality. There is also, when it comes to governance, the issue of corruption that also contributed in weakening the state institution and its ability to address effectively and to respond to the emergence of this kind of security issues and problems.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America series here in Washington. Our topic tonight is insecurity in Africa. Now, Aliyu and Abuja, there are those some observers who have pointed out a change, and you, I think, also alluded to it, in the fight against Boko Haram, that as a result of change in governance, in leadership. Do you share that view?
I do, of course. You know, what we had before this new government came into place, and it was nothing like what we're having now. Before the government came into place, people were not able to travel around. People slept with one eye open in fear. The economic activities were kind of...
So no bridge, yeah? No, yeah.
And it was a very dangerous environment at the time. But one thing I have to point out to you that one of the reasons why this insurgency persists is probably because the effort has been left exclusively and entirely to the government alone. And the population or the citizens don't seem to be contributing much in terms of the fight itself. The whole operation is totally militarized, and there's an incredible amount of corruption within the military itself, which is why the insurgency has lasted as far or as much as it did. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of military, senior military officers facing trials in Nigeria at the moment for stealing the money that was meant to be used in the purchase of weapons. And the lack of participation on the part of the civilian population doesn't seem to be helping much either. So this is being seen as essentially a military operation. I understand it's the military that can fight, but I believe the population also has a role to play in providing intelligence and information to make the job easier for the military itself to do. And while the government is trying to fight the militants, it's also fighting corruption here and in other parts of Africa, which is not making the work easy.
I see. Suleiman, Ali there points out the issue of participation of the local population in fighting these threats. But given the rampant corruption in most of these countries, and our friend in Dakar mentioned, the lack of social basic needs of the people and the high poverty, isn't that a breeding ground for this scenario?
We just call it the failure of the governance systems in the regions. For example, in East Africa. East Africa, the part which is mostly affected by insecurity, you'll find that by and large, East Africa is led by warlords. Museveni came to power through the gun. He could not and does not believe in settling political administrative disputes peacefully. So a civil war erupts. He wants to solve it militarily because he's a warlord. He believes in the gun. Then the conflict from Uganda spills into southern Sudan. It leaves southern Sudan. It goes into Central African Republic. For 30 years, Central African Republic has not settled because it has got Ugandan extremists or Ugandan political dissidents who are fighting there. From there, they spill over again to Central African Republic. Central African Republic is disturbed because of the failure of leadership there. You get two factions, you get all of them militarized, and then you get warlords. Uh-huh. One warlord Muslim, one warlord group Christian. Then they start a conflict, and then it spills over in other countries. Rwanda Kagame is also a warlord. He took over power through military. He believes in solving problems in militarily. He has got a dissident group which is in DRC. There has been tensions between DRC and Rwanda for a long time. The whole eastern DRC there has been conflict because there is those Rwandan dissidents and also your dissidents from Uganda spilling into DRC. Kabila himself is a warlord. So you find all these military warlords unfortunately supported by the international community who armed them, who fund them, and then who think they are creating security. But instead, as warlords, they are increasing. They are creating insecurity. That is why the whole area has been insecure for over 30 years, because it is led by warlords. Look at southern Sudan, another
another military man takes over. He cannot sort out problems politically. There is a failure of governance system, and then you get two warlords. Mm-hmm. And then again, insecurity. It spills over to Uganda. It sends the refugees to Uganda. There is insecurity in the country as people begin competing over limited resources. So even the refugees themselves who are moving across all these borders, they become a source of insecurity themselves. So it's a very complex situation, but I would say, as you have said, corruption or whatever you call it, whether it's corruption or failure of the governance system, but the emergence of warlordism in East Africa and any other countries, the failure to get proper governance, democratic systems, inclusive, transformative governance systems has led to the perpetuation of insecurity in many areas on this whole continent of Africa.
William in Dakar, now given all this we have talked about the ease access of small arms, corruption, poverty, poor governance, how now does one address the security threat in those circumstances?
I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure that all those issues and challenges we just raised are properly addressed. And usually when an issue deteriorates, like what we observed in Mali back in 2012, it's already too late, and usually when the situation gets to that level of instability, people used to focus on the security and the military response. So that's basically what we are talking about right now with the different issue, the main one being the terrorist threat. We are trying to, the different states and the external partners are trying to only to respond to these challenges from a security point of view. And I'm not saying that it's not the good thing to do. The mistakes that were made was to allow the situation to get at this stage. And when the situation got to this stage, the first answer, the first response is a security one. So I think definitely there is a need to change the focus, to adopt a more preventive approach, and to try to act on the different issues, different problems that have led to the security, to a crisis in some areas. But I'm not sure that the countries of the region are taking that approach. So basically right now, the focus is on trying to solve the urgency, to respond to the security urgency by security measures.
I see. Aliyu, talking of following up on William's point there, talking of mistakes that led to the rise, say, for instance, of Boko Haram and spreading in Nigeria, there are those who say the government of Buhari now has, the military has fought the Boko Haram and maybe is succeeding. But are those the causes that are being addressed, like poverty and other grievances that were breeding ground for Boko Haram thrive in Nigeria?
You know, Douglas, the problem with insurgency like Boko Haram is globalization. These military groups or these militant groups are no longer just merely domestic problems. They are not caused by the domestic problem. One of the things that you have to take into consideration is the sophisticated nature of the weapons that they use in launching these attacks. Before now, Boko Haram was much better equipped than the Nigerian army. As a matter of fact, the Nigerian army was often running away, and the people were avoiding areas where Boko Haram operations were taking place because they knew that the militants were much better equipped and they could have much more success than they normally would have. That's one. Two, the issue that often referred to as the reasons behind the emergence of this militant, that of poverty and unemployment, those have been there before, many, many years before then. But I guess some people use the opportunity of having those issues around to encourage the formation of these militant groups in Nigeria and around Africa. And, you know, cases like Al-Qaeda cannot be linked to poverty or Al-Shabaab. These are groups that have political agendas, and as long as their aspirations are not satisfied by the governments of Africa, they will continue to have reasons to fight. The problem is nobody knows what they are fighting for because their motives are not clearly defined. For instance, in Nigeria, many of the victims have been Muslims themselves. They have launched attacks on mosques, and they have launched attacks on churches. And I don't understand how you could be claiming to be fighting in the name of Islam and launch an attack inside the mosque. In fact, the last attack in Nigeria was on a mosque.
Yes.
So their motives and their agendas are not even clearly defined, which is why a lot of people think that their agendas are set by someone beyond the borders of the countries in which they operate. You remember that Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram tried to form an alliance, but that did not come to pass because Al-Shabaab preferred to ally with Al-Qaeda, while Boko Haram chose to be with ISIS. So right there you have an ideological difference between the two religious groups, which makes it a political situation, no? It's no longer a religious issue anymore.
I see. Suleiman, we are running out of time, just in the 1 minute left. How do you see things moving? Can these people be defeated? Is it going to get worse? What's your opinion?
It depends, Douglas, because we have got two types. There is one which has evolved into a transnational and international, like Al-Shabaab and the Boko Harams. Those ones are complicated, but still, they can still be eliminated if the causative factors are dealt with to limit the causes of that poverty, corruption, and others which lure the desperate people to join them.
Mm-hmm.
Then in East Africa, we have got a problem because we have got warlordism. Mm-hmm. Unless there is a drastic change into the leadership whereby we get a new breed of leaders from the gunmen to the politically elected leaders who can be able to start a new system of governance which is inclusive, which is democratic, then it will be able to solve some of these urgent problems which have been festering on for a long time, poverty, corruption, and so on.
Okay.
So I think if we can look at those ones, then maybe we can be able to control our internal conflicts and they don't spill out to become international.
Okay, I'll give the last word to Mr. Asamvo in the last 30 seconds. What do you see happening in the near and mid-term level about this situation?
I think people are going to underline the need to improve regional cooperation and to fight this terrorist threat, and after that in the next 2 months I think I'm not sure that that much would have been done because when after an attack there are always this kind of calls for regional integration, regional cooperation, but after that nothing concrete and nothing effective is actually done.
I see. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel. Mr. William Asamvo, a senior researcher at Institute of Social Studies in Dakar. Suleiman Mugula is a South African-based independent political analyst. And many thanks to my colleague, Ali Mustafa, of VOA House of Service. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you for inviting us.
You're welcome. Our producer tonight was Kwame Ofori, and our engineer was the amiable Suleiman Terawali. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program or want to listen to it again, you can do so by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in, and until next week, I'm your host Douglas Imbuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.